This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope you're doing well on a day that it looks colder than the last couple of days, but the temperatures are actually a little bit warmer. Just sort of overcast today, but hey, enjoy it. This may be the balmiest period we get for a while, because we as we look toward the weekend, the high Saturday may not hit 30 degrees, so be ready for that. But welcome in. It's the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Ferg, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Good to be back in here for a full show. And, yeah, I got a lot to talk about, especially after what's happened since the last time I was on.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, a lot to talk about. Don's getting a break. He's been here almost every day for a couple of weeks.
I know. Yeah, I mean, he had to put up with me a couple Fridays ago. So yeah, you give him the day off.
Man, and wanted to let you know, just like we did everybody else, man. Really appreciate you you coming in and handling 100%. With Don while Dan and I were both out. So
it was a ton of fun. Fun.
Well, that's great. So Don will be back tomorrow. Dan will be back on Monday, as he is still out, and from what we understand, I guess they haven't been snowed in or frozen in yet.
Nope. They got to South Carolina today, so
that's good.
So they were able to make it, and apparently they had a wild one last night as well in their game. I believe big comeback for Troy to win, just like Auburn had a huge comeback to win last night over Texas. So pretty good couple of results there for the extended drive universe. But yeah, I mean, wild game last night. Wild game. But this Auburn basketball team continues to be really, really impressive, considering 2 weeks ago we're talking about a team that's 1-3 in SEC play.
Yeah, things were looking a little bleak, and you were wondering, you know, how are they going to be able to turn it around?
Yep.
Defense is how they've turned this thing around, Justin.
Yeah, defense is how they've turned it around. It's the whole reason why they beat Florida at Florida, first time in 30 years. And, you know, as Stephen Pearl mentioned after that game in Gainesville, it's like, you know, not only is that the best win they've had on the road, probably true road win they've ever had as a program since the Pearls got there, you could make the argument that was the best Florida team that Auburn has played in Gainesville since Billy Donovan's national champion Gators. You know, this Florida team's really good. And did you see what Florida did last night?
Obviously didn't. Oh my goodness. They
nothing like a get right game where you almost double up a team on the road.
Yeah,
they won. It was 95-48 last night over South Carolina. Just absolute destruction. Yeah. So that'll help Auburn out really well. I mean, I think that improved Auburn's win. That win, wins above bubble, which is a new metric a lot of people use for kind of breaking down teams. That Florida win, because of what Florida did against South Carolina, it bumped it up a little bit more. So that win for Auburn in terms of wins above bubble is the best Auburn win since that metric was invented. The second best win, the only one better, is when they beat Houston in that game last season. That's the only other one that's been worth more to a tournament resume than that one. That one is. It says a lot. Beating a really good team like that in a true road game.
Yeah, the defending national champ who looked – I mean, they just looked to be ahead above everybody else in the SEC going into that ball game.
Easily a top 10 team in the analytics right now, and still a top 10 team. So getting that win was huge. And then last night, Auburn – getting off to a rougher start, but it wasn't because they weren't playing bad defense. It was just Texas was doing stuff that they didn't really expect on the game plan.
Well, no. I mean, Texas is a team that was only averaging around 7 threes a game, and they had that in the first half.
They had that in the first 11 minutes.
Well, about the time I got in. I mean, I didn't get into the arena until right at the midpoint. It was little over 10 minutes to go, and it was a double-digit Florida lead, and I've been listening on the way in. And
they're just waiting on you to show up. Because, showed up, I think it
from
was
– from the time I got there, I mean, Auburn really dominated. But, I mean, they – you know, Auburn's game plan was, look, Texas is not a great three-point shooting team. We're going to pack it in. We're going to try to rebound. And Texas, credit them, not only did they shoot, but they rebounded well in the first half.
They did.
Auburn was down 6 or 7 at the half in rebounds.
Yeah, they shoot long, rebound long. They did a really good job, and they did a great job of just, I mean, hitting the shots that Auburn was letting them be willing to let them have. Then at halftime, you know, Stephen Pearl said after the game, I asked him about it last night, I was like, did you change anything on defense? He said, no, we thought about maybe blitzing the ball screen, and then we said, you know what, they can't keep shooting like this. This is an outlier. There's no way they're going to keep shooting this. Let's stick to our guns. Let's make sure they don't get the twos that they want. If they want to keep shooting threes, they're not going to hit them like that. Sure enough, they didn't. They start 7 of 10 from deep. They go three of their next 14.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was – that's sometimes, you know, and Pearl defended it as like, he's an analytics guy. Sometimes you just play the numbers and trust it at this point because you got a pretty large body of work, and it worked out. Meanwhile, in the second half, Auburn decided to have one of the best halves of basketball ever on offense. They were averaging over 2 points per possession.
Yeah, because
until the final two possessions.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Just, I mean, when you average a bucket every time you go down the floor, that is insane basketball. That is something you will hardly ever see.
Well, how many possessions was it that they didn't score on?
Four.
Yeah, and out of 24
out of 28.
Yeah,
24 out of 28. There was one turnover, and there was
and that was one of just three turnovers, by the way, in the entire game.
Yeah, tied a school record. It was one turnover, and I think three missed shots that weren't rebounded by Auburn, and I'm pretty sure two of them were like. Two of them were like balls that like just rimmed out. Like they were all over it. And obviously, you knew going into the game, Texas fouls as much as anybody in the country. You know, Auburn, plenty of credit should go to Mike Burgemaster at halftime when they were like, you know what? If Texas is going to do this, they can't stay in front of us. Keyshawn Hall's, you know, trust Keyshawn Hall, put the ball in his hands, Todd Pettiford, Kevin Overton as well, and just spread them out, try to make this as much of a one-on-one game as possible. And the big difference in this team compared to the last few teams that Auburn's had, these really good teams, is it's not just Keyshawn Hall. Auburn has several guys that feel like they can win their one-on-one matchups off the dribble, scoring, and they use that to the full advantage because Texas was either going to give up the shot, or give up the kick out, or they're going to send you to the free throw line, and Auburn's done an excellent job of not only getting to the line but knocking them down this season.
You know, I still hear a lot of people saying, you know, that's Auburn's looking for that third scorer. Well, actually, right now, Kevin Overton's been the number two guy. I mean, KO has really been impressive, and he was again last night. I mean, just a phenomenal 25 for him. We were talking though. I thought it was really interesting as I was watching it last night. I'm going, is the basket on the south end bigger than the one on the north end? Because both teams shot lights out on that goal on the south end.
Yeah, Auburn always shoots better on that end in the second half because they're right in front of their bench.
Yeah, that's their home.
But other teams usually shoot. I don't know. It's something about there. I think it's the.
Maybe
I wonder
the backdrop. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe the backdrop's a little bit different. I don't know. But Overton just. I mean, when you talk about the game he had, you know, he gets that early tech. He's frustrated. He's not hitting shots. Things are not going his way. Auburn's getting called for a lot of fouls.
Oh, they were very. The officials look. They were pretty whistle happy last night.
They were.
I mean, it seemed like every trip there was a whistle.
And when they pivoted off of that, when he responded, he did such a great job and didn't miss a shot in the second half. I had the numbers last night in the observations. Kevin Overton, so true shooting percentage is a formula where you take your shooting percentage and then you give more weight to threes and free throws and kind of do that. Kevin Overton took 17 total shots last night between threes, twos, and free throws. He had a true shooting percentage of 98%.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, just unbelievable second half from him.
54 points for Auburn there in the second half last night.
Yeah, and he's got He's really good at, you know, he's a good catch and shoot guy, but you've also seen he can go drive downhill and get his own shot. He's also really good at relocating his own look. I mean, he had a couple of those threes.
Oh, he had a couple threes where it looked like he was going to have them, and then
he's like, you know, because
take a step back a little more square and shoot.
Some guys are better shooting off that pocket where you can kind of pull back.
Yeah, he's not.
My brother was always that way playing basketball, where it's just like you feel more comfortable getting that pullback,
right,
than necessarily
as opposed
to catch
and shoot.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just it was really, really good offense. And you know, Overton said something after the game that I thought was really telling about this team. You know, you only have three turnovers. You barely make any bad shots in that second half. And I think one of the things that this Auburn team has done such a good job of this season is because they have so many good one-on-one scores, because they have a front court that's really physical and athletic, they get into these situations now where it's you run your initial set, and if you don't love it, don't force it. Don't force a shot just because you feel like you have to go fast. And they'll pull it out, and it'll be – next time you watch Auburn basketball play or go back and watch the game from last night, notice how many times this happens. Shot clock gets down about 10 or 12 seconds. Ball goes to Keyshawn Hall, goes to Todd Pettiford, it goes to Kevin Overton. You'll see a signal. They'll tap the top of their head. Somebody's going to set a high ball screen, and they're just going to get downhill. And they're either going to get to the free throw line, or they're going to get a good look. And I read it today. I was looking up when – possessions go at least 20 seconds into the shot clock, Auburn is a top 20 offense in America.
I believe it. Scoring.
They are so good at late. And so when you're not forcing it, when you're not being like, oh, no, the shot clock's late, we got to do something with it. When you're calm, you're not turning over, you're not forcing bad shots, it's hard. Anybody will tell you. It's hard to play defense for 30
seconds.
It
really is.
It's really hard to play defense for 30 seconds. And this team has done a really good job with the personnel they have of taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and even though Auburn is not that the same half-court offense that they were a year ago.
Yeah. Last year they were good at late offense because it was dumping into Jani.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Something
but
was going to happen.
It's not like that. But, I mean, you've seen this team morph from what we saw early in the year and what we were expecting, more of a they're going to get it out, they're going to run, they get a first good shot, they're going to go ahead and take it. Now, they still will take if it's a good shot and they've got guys in position underneath, they'll still take it. But it's not nearly what we saw earlier, and they are much more efficient now.
They are so efficient and taking care of the ball. I mean, it's you know, three turnovers in a game is crazy. Texas doesn't force turnovers, so that's the team to do it against. But a really good point was made last night. I think it was Jacob Waters, the OA News, pointed out that's their third straight game for Auburn where they've had single-digit turnovers. And, you know, we've seen this Auburn team win with a ton of turnovers this year. But the fact that they're cutting those down, it helps so much. And as Pearl said, you saw it in the second half of this game. When you don't turn the ball over or when you don't take bad shots, you know, well, Florida did this a ton against Auburn when you would call it basically shooting a turnover. You take such a shot that, like, there's no shot you're getting to the rebound. And the other team's not only going to get it, but they're going to be able to get down the floor with it. When you avoid doing that, you get to set up your own defense on the other end.
Right.
And that's Auburn was night and day on defense. In fact, in the second half, Texas calms down from three like they expected it to. And really, all they had on offense was either the big fella banging down
drawing
low,
fouls,
which he was really good at. He's the best in the country at that. Or it was Dalen Swain having to hit not just shots, tough shots. Because he's
you're right.
He's so good. He's so good. And, you know, this Auburn team is this against Florida, too. When you look at Tommy Hawk and how he had a great game, but he was kind of it for Florida. Auburn's done that a few times this season in wins where it's like one guy might get us.
Yeah, one guy seems to go off.
One guy might get us. But if we can stop everybody else, knowing that on the other end of the floor it's going to be more than one guy for Auburn, you know, you can usually win a lot of games that way.
Justin Ferguson here with me on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Let's go ahead and get to the phones before we get to our first break, because Yellowhammer's been hanging on for quite a while. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Well, I wanted to pick up on this basketball thing here. I want to thank first Bruce Pearl for helping to fill the gap between the end of football season and the start of the next football season, because, you know, we did go through a desert there for a while. And anyway, though, I had a brief experience with basketball in high school, and I look back and think, man, that was a lot of running. This is
you're right starter. About that.
And so I understand that how depth is very important in lots of sports. And so from your discussions over the last few days, you're talking about how Auburn has like seven guys to basically use. And I was wondering a couple of things. What did Bruce Pearl generally have available, and mm-hmm. what do the top contender teams have available, the numbers in their roster?
Yeah, it's a great question, y'all. Here, Auburn usually would play about 9 or 10 yep. deep under Bruce. They went to 8 last season because JP Pegues didn't really work out for them. But I think this season they'd love to be at 9 or 10.
Yeah.
The problem is you've got your backup center who's out for the year with a medical condition. You've got a wing who was behind the 8-ball a year with an injury. You got another wing that missed most of the preseason with another injury. Then you've got another point guard that has not been able to stick in the rotation. So they'd love to be at that point, but they haven't been. So they're kind of at 7. If you can make 7 work, it can really, really work for you. You look at some teams, Duke, Purdue this past season, Arizona's at this point. A lot of these like elite teams will play just 7 or 8 deep and really limit their rotations and not go as deep in March. But doing that for a whole season, it takes dudes who are tremendously in shape. And I think a lot of credit's got to go to Auburn's strength and conditioning mm-hmm. staff. But guys like Keyshawn Hall, Kevin Overton, Todd Pettiford playing 35-plus minutes a night without blinking, that's a big move. So you see really good teams play that way. It's different from what Auburn's had to do in the past, but they've kind of been forced into this situation because they got bit really hard by the injury bug early in the season, and so they haven't been as deep as they wanted to be.
Yeah, you saw last night, I mean, Tahad and Keyshawn Hall played 36 minutes each. And Steven was talking about that a couple of days ago, about the condition they're in. They'd love to have Tahad in that 32 to 34-minute range.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just
tough.
How much can you afford not to have him out there on the court?
It's tough. You know, you wonder if they have to experiment at some point, maybe KO playing someone. Mm-hmm. That's probably the most likely. You know, Blake Mychalek, great story and all that. It's just not really working right for him as much as they would hope. So, yeah, it's a tough spot to be in. It's not uncommon, though, for an elite college basketball team to play this kind of thing. But you got to have special players, and, you know, they definitely have special players on this team. And I'll say this, but I know you're getting a break, but like a lot of credit should go to Todd Pettiford in this game. He's 2 of 10 from the field.
Mm-hmm.
He barely shoots in the second half, though. He just doesn't have it,
right.
Doesn't force it. He finishes the game second best plus minus on the team. Really good defender in this game. 0 turnovers, several assists. So, again, everyone in America is watching this dude right now and say, when is he going to start hitting shots? And that's a huge – I mean, if he can, this team's going to be really scary.
Oh, no kidding.
But in the meantime, until he can get out of this slump, I think one of the best things Tahad Pettiford has done for the last few weeks has just been, like, not letting bad shooting affect him in other areas.
He's not forcing it, and he's still, you know, locked playing in,
on defense.
Every other area of the
yeah,
game.
Kevin Overton said last night, he said, you know, his teammates give him a ton of credit and a ton of respect because they know he's frustrated. But he can't let it affect everybody mm-hmm. else around him. So, you know, credit goes to Hot. And if he could start hitting those shots,
remember,
Vegas, the beginning of December, he got really hot out of nowhere. If he can find that again, this Auburn team's going to be really scary.
Appreciate the call, Yellowhammer. We need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Who was it? Steve? Hang on, Steve. You're up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Steve's been hanging on. Hey, Steve.
Hey, a couple things from last night. I mean, great comeback. You know, I'm sitting next to my Longhorn wife, so that was a good night for me. But I was about to hide, and I'm sure the coaches have noticed whatever, but even watching him warm up, I mean, his form is, he's drifting. I mean, his feet are coming out from under him. He's going up and back, and it's almost like he's worried about every shot being blocked. I mean, he's kind of falling into the KT habit of when he goes into the paint, instead of trying to make the shot, he falls down. I mean, he's got to just make the shot. If they block the shot, they block the shot. I mean, you know, it's like he's going to have to do something because he's in a slump, you know, drive more, whatever, or, you know, make some mid-range jumpers. But he's in one of those, you know, shooter slumps that hopefully he can shoot his way out of. But it was even odd watching him warm up. He wasn't making anything. It was just like they weren't going in. But the other thing from last night, and it's the soapbox thing, is you're not going to the game. Give your tickets to somebody. It was a Wednesday night against a pretty good basketball team. And if you come all the way from Austin to be to the jungle, you didn't get to the jungle until about 12 minutes into the second half. The kids are always great. But there were plenty of empty seats, and there were plenty of people sitting on their hands last night that showed up about 10 minutes into the first half.
Well, now, I showed up 10 minutes into the first half, Steve, but I couldn't help it. Well, I was on the air till 6.
Well, yeah, I understand that.
And I got stopped on the way.
But I give people that they got to come from Montgomery or Birmingham, whatever. But there are a lot of seats that were never.
No, you're right. On. You're right. There were more seats around us last night than I can recall, and I mean, there weren't a ton, but there were still more seats open around us than I expected for a team coming off that Florida win and on a winning streak, at it 6 o'clock.
Well, I wish we would come up with a way that says, "Hey, I'm not going to make it. I've put it on the secondary market. I'm not going to get my ridiculous price. Let me give it to a kid who's in standing room only." There's plenty of students wrapping around there. They can go to app or something and say, "Hey, there's 2 seats available. You know, grab them." And somebody could go sit in your seats. It just looks bad on TV. And you know, everybody got fired up in the second half. And, you know, everyone who talks about the offensive rebound from Freeman, the play that got everybody going was Murphy's dunk, the extra pass baseline dunk.
Yeah.
He brought the house down, and that got people that have been sitting on their hands all night out of their seats. But it's just hard to sit there last night. There was no energy in the building, and I think the kids feel it. I mean, they as poorly as they played in the first half, they were lucky not to be down by 20.
Oh, yeah, and Steven said that very thing. And part of it, though, I mean, Steve, I mean, the way it is, I mean, it's still – I still think that this the fan base, part of it is still learning basketball, that there are going to be huge ebbs and flows, and you can't always wait for the team to get you going, that sometimes, you know, it has to be the other way around. And look, let's face it, I mean, Texas just got out to that – they got out to that blazing start, and that quieted a lot of people down.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that thing looked like a dumpster to them for a while. I mean, they made a bunch of tough shots, and I think – easier shots in the second half. Another thing, you know, I don't know if Stephen Pearl is going to be here for the next 20 years and be a legend or whatever. You know, first off, give the kid a break. I mean, he got a really difficult hand. But the last couple games, he's shown a tremendous feel for this basketball team and done a great job in putting them in a position to win. And the kids are obviously, you know, relating with him and learning it, because, you know, they extended the defense in the second half. They made him make the extra pass. And said, "Okay, you know, you can drive, but we're going to cover you straight up." And they totally changed the tone of the game, because, I mean, if you go on the Texas site, which I enjoyed doing because I just have a lot of Texas friends.
Right.
And the second half, it changed the how, why we're playing, why are we passing the ball around the perimeter? Well, because we weren't giving you the three and you couldn't drive past our defense. And we figured that out. I think maybe coming in this game, the defense they ran against Florida to stop the bigs, They thought maybe they needed to run against that big redheaded kid who – I want to know this, though. What girl did both those guys date at the same time? Because, I mean, Jovic and 8 from Texas, I know they're both Eastern Europeans. They got some sort of a problem with each other, because that was borderline ugly if you were there in person. There were a lot of elbows thrown.
Oh, there was some – yeah, it was physical. It was really, really physical.
They were mad about something. They did not enjoy each other's company at all last night. It wasn't a friendly reunion of kids that, you know, grew up in the, I guess, close to each other, might have played against each other as teenagers. But, hey, great win, great comeback. You know, it just – when he made that long three just from out of the corner and just kind of looked at the jungle, I was like, yeah, it's on now. We're ready to go. Y'all have a good evening.
All right, good stuff, Steve. Appreciate the call.
By the way, I got a stat for you. It reminded me of this when Yellowhammer was talking about how Auburn went through the desert for a while in basketball. So last night, Auburn wins. They have a four-game winning streak in SEC play. They have now had a four-game winning streak or better in SEC play in eight of their last nine seasons. They only did it twice in the previous 18 years.
Yeah, I believe that.
I mean,
four was unbelievable. Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Two was really, really nice.
But the fact that back, you know, they're able to kind of get on this little run right here. And look, the next four, pretty rough. I mean, you're probably going to be a dog in of them, if not all four of them. But you know,
well, you get at least you've got two of them at home.
You get two of them at home, and look, I mean, it goes back
and,
to
you've got a week in between Saturday and Alabama coming
that,
in.
That's going to be huge. But here's the other thing: it's just with this team, it's like if you can beat Florida on the road this season, there ain't anybody you can't beat.
Absolutely
not on the schedule. So you got to play hard and you got to play well consistently. I thought last night Auburn had to make the necessary tweaks on offense to make it going, but I thought what they did on defense was really – I mean, Texas finished the game with only six makes at the rim, and that's where they thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So between that, doing that to Florida, doing that to Ole Miss, I mean, Auburn's done a really good job of keeping dudes out of the paint, and a lot of credit, again, is Jovich fights a lot, Sway down low as well, but – in a game where he didn't have a ton of stats, I mean, Keyshawn Murphy is
– yeah, he only had 6 points.
And I think he had five rebounds, but all of them came on defense, and every one of them feels mm-hmm. big in a game like that. I mean, a healthy Keyshawn Murphy, is just this looks like a completely different defense. And it looks like a completely different offense, too, when he's out there, but especially on the defensive end, because he has become that anchor that he was at Mississippi State. That was right. The thing. It was like when people were – you know, really freaking out about this team in the earlier in the season was like, well, you don't have any rim protection. Well, you don't have the same rim protection you used to have. But I kept going back to him like, Keyshawn Murphy was a really good rim protector at Mississippi State. He just wasn't healthy. And I think you're seeing it more and more now. Not necessarily in block shots, but just keeping guys out of the paint and keeping them from getting those easy looks has made a huge, huge difference for this team.
Yeah, Steve mentioned him, and we mentioned Elijah too. I mean, Elijah Freeman is a guy that can really make some plays on both ends of the court. I mean, he's got such reach. I mean,
that turnaround mid range jumper he hit during the game mm-hmm. was that's an NBA shot. That's a guy that
his potential is
him and Sway are really, really like high potential guys. That's why Auburn got him. But I mean, like that. Go back and watch that Freeman shot. And I mean, there's only a certain percentage of guys in college basketball who would even think about taking that shot, much less hitting it. And Auburn's got one of them, and it's the dude who you know was in it slumping like crazy from that dude. I think he's had like. He missed like 10 straight open threes over the last few games. It is last night though, and if he comes on,
yeah.
You're a completely different team.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Pat, hang on. You're up first when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and let's get right to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey guys, yeah, that was a great game last night. We were kind of, I think the caller earlier was talking about why the crowd wasn't there. My brother dropped me off and he went to park his car and the problem is that they don't, in that parking deck, people are trying to circle and so he couldn't even get up to even park in the where we get the free parking. We couldn't even get up there, and there's tons of spots up there. I feel like if it's 10 to 12 minutes before the game, they should let everybody park at that point. I mean, I think that's part of the problem is people aren't getting in because they can't park.
Well, now I'll say this as somebody who has a pass in that parking deck, but I was coming from another direction, so I didn't even try. When it's a situation where I'm getting there and the game's about to start, they do that. They will. I've seen that many times where they'll just let anybody parked because it's getting close to the game. But I don't know what was going on. Yeah. There were a couple of other things that were going on campus last night. Because I was coming in, you know, from over here at the studio, so I came in from the north side, and there was something going on around the dorms right there near the arena where there was a lot of loading and unloading, and I got sort of stuck in that where the car in front of me and behind me both stopped and put on flashers, and people were getting in and out and carrying luggage or bags and stuff. So, I mean, there was something else going on as well. So it was a mess last night trying to get into the arena.
Yeah. I think I would say about 10 minutes into the game, then it started to fill up a little bit more. There was a couple of things. I feel like the DJ was playing some weird songs at what in the first half. But
Did you notice that, Justin?
I don't know, some song I'd never heard before, and it was not working. But I feel like, but the second half, the DJ, I'm with guy or girl, they cranked it up and it was a lot better. And I also feel like at the halftime, that HealthSouth thing, that game is impossible. I don't think anybody's ever got more than 3 or 4 bones out of that thing.
That one's impossible. It's tough.
Yeah.
Right. It's tough when the 94-foot putt and the, you know, layup, free throw 3, half court. I've seen those done multiple times, and I've never seen anybody come close on the other ones.
No. And it was interesting last night. The guy had a real shot at the $5,000 tuition thing, and I don't recall them being as strict, but I guess once you make one, once you have a winner, you're going to make sure they only get one shot at that midcourt, at the half court shot, like that last night.
Actually, I don't understand that. I think the
rules are they're supposed to get a half court shot, but they've let it slide in the past. But you know, I guess when you have to pay it out, then you want to make sure you don't have two winners, you know, back to back.
Well, I think the concept for the Aubie thing, you know, for the East Alabama, it's not a bad concept, but the holes aren't big enough apparently, and the thongs are so big. That I mean, and they asked the guy before. They said, "You think you can do it?" And he goes, "No." He said straight up, "He goes no." And I mean, he couldn't even get one or two of them out of there. So I feel like they need to either make the bones smaller or make the thongs, you know, or make the holes bigger, one or two. But that game is almost like they needed to adjust that one. But no, it was great. I tell you, when you were talking about Elijah Freeman, I think when we were finally caught up to one. And then Keyshawn Hall got fouled, and he missed his free throw, and then he missed the second one. And I was like, oh, my God, we're going to – you know, a lot of times teams will use up their energy to catch up, and then they don't get over the hill. If you don't get the lead, it kind of demoralizes you. And he went up over top of a guy and grabbed the ball from him and then laid it back in. And I think that was a very important basket because it was like, I think, about 8 minutes to go. And that gave us the lead. And at that point, we just slowly built the lead up even further. But him missing those two free throws, I'm like, oh, my God. Because he's like 14 for 17, but he missed two back-to-back. But Elijah Freeman has got so much potential. I mean, when he skies and he grabs the ball. And I tell you what, at the beginning of the year, we were talking about how Jovic, his hands weren't very good. And lately, his hands have been really
He's been much stronger, no question.
Yeah, I don't know if they did something or help him, you know, training or whatever, but he's like a totally different person when it comes to when the ball hits his hands, they're not ripping it out like they used to. So we're definitely making progress. And I love listening to Steven because you can tell he's got this engineering kind of brain. You know, it's like he's calculating all the numbers. And it was kind of risky, you know, rolling with the threes. But that's where I always say, you know, oh, my God, nobody shoots 80%. I mean, I think Villanova in the championship game 1 year won the championship because they shot like 70% or something from three. But that the numbers always – it's just weird how they always – if you're hot in the first half, you're cold in the second half. So he rolled it the right way. But no, it's just it's great seeing that what his calculations and his thought process. I think the players are starting to realize he's not just some geeky guy. I just love watching it. I think he's going to end up being great, and I think the players are starting to realize that too. I wish someone could figure out what is the deal with Magwood. Is he just not going to get out of the doghouse?
I don't think so at this point. And the last time
Haven't seen him in like five games.
And the last time Stephen Pearl talked about him, he talked about defense being the big thing with him. So I mean, it seems like that's going to be that's the case at this point.
Okay, all right, well, that's cool. Hey, like I said, I mean, you're right. I think the difference is that even Keyshawn Hall. I mean, that guy is like you wind him up and he just like goes. I mean, he's like a energized bunny rabbit. So, you know, I feel as long as we don't have injuries, I think these guys can fight it out. But I thought last year with Alabama when they were playing their point guard, you know, like 38 minutes a game, I figured that's going to hit you in the playoffs. And I don't know if it did or not, but. That's my only fear is that you kind of hit a wall at some point, but they seem like they're Iron Men, so let's just keep rolling with it. Anyway, thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Pat. Yeah. I mean, I guess there are a couple of ways you can look at it now. Fatigue and legs can go, especially, you know, in a conference tournament. I think it'd be more. It'd even be tougher because you're playing back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
You'd have to play consecutive days.
I think in a perfect world, Auburn feels like they have an eighth guard an extra guard they could rely on. And right now it's like they're having to be super strategic with Blake. Nothing from Simon, nothing from Caden. Bashir's not back yet. Even if he is, you don't know if he'll be able to.
Will he be able to?
Right. So I think in a perfect world, that's where they want to go to, but – you know, I think Ira Bowman deserves a ton of credit with the way he's handled these rotations, and I think you saw it really well last night. The strategy they've used here recently with Blake and Tahad is like, you know, Tahad will play 36 minutes, but the 4 minutes he's out, they're always right around media
they're
timeouts.
Always around when you know there's going to be a timeout.
You put him right before an immediate timeout, yep. Or you steal something right before the end of the half and put him out there and just say, hey, we're going to limit the amount of game time you're out, but you're still going to get a lot of rest. You're still going to get plenty of rest because, you know, you're going to be, you know, where the next dead ball, we're going to be sitting here for three extra minutes. So I think that's, you know – yes, it's 36, but it's not like he's playing 36 straight and there's mm-hmm. no breaks or anything like that. They've had to be pretty strategic. But, yeah, I think in a perfect world, they might be able to find one more guard they can rely on right now, and they just don't have it at the moment.
And we had a caller yesterday, Justin, you know, wondering, well, I think it may have been Pat, you know, wondering, well, why doesn't Auburn go find the Charles Bediako and put him on there? Well, there isn't one, and Auburn doesn't have a spot.
No. I mean, well, and look at, you know, think of it this way. The thing with Bediako is he was enrolled already, and it was like, oh, his.
Well, he was an Alabama student in good standing when he left.
Yes.
So it's easy for him.
And he was enrolled at the beginning of the semester before they cleared him or before they quote-unquote cleared him. But. The thing with Bediako is, as absurd as it is that he's even playing, but like he also, you got to thread like several holes with him just to get to the point where like, all right, I can see how they're at least trying to make this work. Where it's like, okay, he'd still be eligible if he didn't go to the NBA or if he didn't go pro. He didn't technically play in the NBA, so that's not really, you know, what's the difference between him and the G League guys? He'd still have eligibility remaining if he was out. So you can hit all those, and it's like for Auburn, it's like at this point you look around and you're like, you know, and if you're an Auburn fan who wants a free dunk on an Alabama fan, it's this. Guys that Auburn sends to the league actually get to the NBA, right? The number of guys who haven't made it to the NBA, there were older guys that are not like, yes, Jalen Williams hasn't played in an NBA game. Jalen Williams also played 5 years at Auburn. Right. His eligibility clock went down. Auburn has not been in a situation. I think, you got to think, go back to this. I think it's since Jared Harper. I think Jared Harper is the last guy for Auburn that left early and didn't make it to the league, right? Like, it didn't make it to the NBA.
Yeah, yeah, at least
if you're going from Auburn, if you're going from Auburn, you're going to get on a roster at some point. And you know, you might have had your eligibility expired, but, like, it's weird that, like, you know, the whole Bediako thing is insane, but, like, at the very least, you're having to admit as a team, as a player, as a coaching staff, yeah, man, this dude did not work out in the NBA, and so we gotta bring him back here. It's like to admit that, like, yeah, man, you ain't got it to play in the league, and now we need to like bend all these things to get you back in. Like, that's, you know, it's a little humbling on top
it,
of the
it fact. Is, it is, but.
But they don't care.
Well, one of the things is, let's face it, there aren't many schools that if they had the opportunity to get somebody now, they try to do it. Alex Golish said as much yesterday down in Mobile.
Did you see the news today about Bediako?
I don't think so.
They have his next hearing
it's
about
the
injunction.
It's going to be the day before. Yeah,
the day before the Auburn game. Yep. So,
you know, that was
nothing like some drama.
That was the day that people thought the TROs were going to come to an end. Mm-hmm. Actually, the TRO extends all the way to the 10th, but people had thought that's when it would stop and that's when it would have to be. So it's good to know that we at least have a date for it. I think I'll be surprised if he doesn't win.
Why should we believe that he's not going to be able to? Like, it's the judge in the case now is a two-time Bama grad.
Yes.
So it's like, you're playing, like, it's a literal home court.
How many judges in Tuscaloosa County
are not going to make that decision?
Connections
like,
with the University of
Alabama. And that's what makes it crazy that is like where the legal thing is. Or it's like, well, technically it works here. And it's like, it's nobody neutral. It's like literally like, we're just getting the court, you do to the courthouse. You know, we're going to get the judge. And like, yeah, man, like the judge is probably going to have some ties to Alabama if he's the judge in Tuscaloosa.
He's also the judge presiding over the Darius Miles case.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. That's small world, eh?
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time for you to join us. We will check in with David Paschal again up in Chattanooga at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock. But we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, and we mentioned the Charles Bediako thing there at the end of the last segment. That's not even the crazy. Well, it's one of them. It seems like every week, Justin, there's something else. There's more. I mean, and since you were on, and since we've had a chance to talk with you, I mean, you've now got Dabo Swinney had. I mean, my goodness, I don't know what to call it. His oratory that he had about the tampering from Ole Miss, and now we see it looks like a second school, Fresno State, apparently is alleging that Pete Golding and Ole Miss tampered with their players. Is anything going to come of any of this? I have a sneaking feeling that if the NCAA is going to do anything, it's going to be to a school like Ole Miss.
Yes.
A school that hasn't been one of the big haves lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can show that they still can flex their muscles by nailing the Rebels.
Yeah, I mean, I just the NCAA is just so toothless in a lot of stuff. The Bediako thing is a pretty good example of that. There's like, I have zero faith that they're mm-hmm. going to be able to do anything effectively. And I don't think we're going to get any meaningful change in college athletics the way it's run or what's until something breaks off, like
but
until
how,
something changes.
Yeah, I just wonder now, how does that happen? I mean, everybody goes, well, we've got to have collective bargaining. Why do the players want collective bargaining now? They've got all the power. I mean, I don't know that they feel like they need anything to help their side.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the thing there. It's like, you know, you could get protections and, you know, there would be things that you could benefit you could get from being an employee. But, yeah, you're right. Like, you know, there you'd have
at
to be
the, at the expense of perhaps some of the power that they have.
Sure. Right, it's now like the open, you know, you can leave whenever you want and you can do whatever you want. But it's like, yeah, I think we need.
Oh, there's no question we need.
We need a setup where you get to. I mean, we're talking contracts, we're talking about employment status, we're talking about rules and regulations for all this stuff, and not just, you know, hey, this is kind of semi-legal, do whatever you want kind of stuff. It just, that's not the case. I think it does much more harm than good. And I think what it's going to happen, what's going to have to happen is I think schools, you know, and conferences are going to have to kind of put their foot down and say, like, you know what, if we're going to keep doing this, if we're going to be playing college football, like, or college basketball at a high level, like, we need to put in some regulations, some rules, some structure back into this, and be willing to go through the red tape, be willing to go through all the stuff that's going to come from
rules.
Yeah, and enforce it.
Yep.
Come up with something that works. And honestly, I think we're going to be in a more of a scenario where you're probably going to see some conferences break away and do stuff on their own, and that might have to be how the way it goes until everybody gets on board.
Yeah, and that may be that may be pretty soon. Mm-hmm. All right. We are out of time here in hour number one of The Drive. We'll check in with David Paschal, get his thoughts on college athletics, the crazy world of college athletics, when we come back at hour number two. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a gray, but it's not quite as cold day. But just give it a day or two, and the cold will be back. But welcome in the Thursday Drive. Dan is continuing his tour of the East Coast, as he's been to Huntington, West Virginia, and now is in South Carolina, right?
Yeah, Conway.
Yep. So he will be back on Monday. So it's Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio today. We're giving Don Dunn a day off. Don's been on just about every day over the last couple of weeks. Really appreciate that. He'll be back in tomorrow. Dan will be back in on Monday. Justin and I here in the studio. Drew at the controls as we talk, you know, the world, the crazy world, as I said a little while ago, of college athletics. And who better to join us than our good friend, regular Thursday guest here on The Drive. And that's David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, just wrapping up his show there on WGOW in Chattanooga. David, how are you doing, and how's the weather up there?
It is fine. It is cold, and it's going to be, of course, cold everywhere this weekend.
That's right.
I think there's some snow Saturday morning, and, of course, obviously Auburn plays up at Tennessee. That's an 8:30 Eastern tip Saturday night, so I don't know if – I think it's just supposed to be snow. So no, like, icy mess and stuff.
Oh, that's
so
good.
I don't think it'll be, like, horrible. It's supposed to be a lot worse in the Carolinas compared to just eastern Tennessee.
Well, that's good as somebody who's planning on going to Knoxville on Saturday. I've been trying to keep an eye on everything, and I talked to a friend of mine who covers Tennessee today, and they're like, the road should still be fine. You know, you should be fine. So I'm looking forward to it because I always love covering a game at Thompson Bowling or whatever they call it now. It is one of my favorite places to cover a basketball game, so I'm looking forward to it. I was just wanted to be able to get there safely, so I'm looking forward to it.
And it's so weird with the time. I mean, I live literally like an hour and 45 minutes from walking into my house to the Food City Center, and so I was like, I have no idea what time I should leave. I mean, if you leave there at five, you get there before 7, and you're still twiddling your thumbs for 90 minutes with an 8:30 tip.
Yeah, 8:30 tip is crazy because I was in Gainesville last week for the Auburn Florida game, and I left there and Auburn played in the afternoon, and I left the arena, and I went somewhere and worked, and I thought, Alabama Tennessee should be over by now. And I looked, and it was like they still had like 10 minutes left. And so I listened to that one on the drive back to my grandparents. I was like, good Lord, how late is that? So, yeah, Auburn's going to get to experience that one on. But, you know, hey, Auburn's already had a 9 o'clock tip to this season, and they get another one later this year. So I guess you got to get used to it.
Yeah, 9 o'clock weeknight game.
I think a third of Tennessee's league games, six of their league games are either at 8:30 or 9. So
awful.
Which is weird for a team on the Eastern time zone. But, hey, Bill, one thing Justin and I have in common is we're still trying to use Visine to get the pain out of our eyes from about 4 years ago where Auburn and Tennessee up in Knoxville played a 46-43 thriller.
Yep.
Oh, no kidding.
It was so funny because the times I've been up there, it was the 46-43 game, and then I was like, man, that was really rough. And then right after, the next time I went there is when Dalton Kinnett couldn't miss. And it was like, I saw like the two extremes of offensive basketball where it was two teams who could not do any, 10 players who could not do anything, and then one guy who completely took over a game has been my experience in Knoxville.
Yeah, I was going to say, but Justin probably hasn't been in there when it felt like, why in the world did anybody build an arena this big? I mean, the sad thing was for a few years Tennessee women's basketball was outdrawing the men, and Thompson Bowling, you know, felt like it was three times larger than it should have been.
Well, and of course, the original plan and the sole purpose to build the Food City Center the size that they did was to have more seats than Rupp Arena.
And right. So I remember.
The top seven or eight rows at that time of course, what was then Thompson Bowling Arena, but the top seven or eight rows was just bench seating. It was like sitting on Neyland Stadium seats. And
wow.
It was awful. But they about, you know, and it opened around 87 or 88, and then about 15 years later they renovated it, and it really is nice on the inside.
That's
great. Justin can tell you, it looks like a, I don't know what it looks like on a, I mean, it looks just like a warehouse on the outside.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's no charm to it whatsoever. But when you get into it, it is. It's a. Auburn's got a beautiful smaller arena, and Tennessee's got a really nice on the inside larger arena.
Yeah, it's it's funny that you made that comparison, because like Rupp's like that too, where it's like it is just a box, but then you go in
right.
And you're like, wow, this is now. I'll tell you, it's I love Thompson Bowling, love Rupp, been there, those. Plenty of times. Ole Miss has the pavilion's really nice because it's basically like if you took Neville at Auburn and like built it a few years later and add some bells and whistles. But let me tell you, there is nothing in the SEC that can compare to the Moody Center at Texas, because the Moody Center, which they built a few years ago, it is half owned by the city of Austin and half owned by Texas. And the best way I can describe it is imagine a brand new NBA arena, just make it a little bit smaller. So it's got all the bells and whistles of all the really fancy NBA arenas. And I walked around that thing last year when Auburn played there, and I was like, this isn't a college basketball arena. I'm not watching a college basketball game. I'm watching an NBA game. And to that point, somebody told me that when the Spurs are on their rodeo tour every year, when they can't use the dome for – or where they can't use the arena for like two weeks – they go and play in Austin now because it's basically an NBA arena. So, yeah, I do love Thompson Bowling, though. Looking forward to it on Saturday if I can get up there in one piece. It's so cool. And like Bill, you were saying, like, it used to feel empty and cavernous. I can see how I could do it easily. Every time I've been up there, that place is packed to the rafters, and it gets super loud. And that's the difference. So it's like if you want to compare Food City to Rupp, it's like – Tennessee fans are full tilt from the beginning for those games. Kentucky, it's a little bit more of an older crowd, and if Kentucky's not playing well, they won't get quite as loud. Kentucky, they're out for blood for the beginning, so it's always a fun time up there. And, hey, you know, Stephen Pearl, first game as a head coach at Tennessee where he played, so that's going to be a fun story.
Yeah, back to his alma mater. And hey, two teams that are feeling pretty good about themselves right now. You know, a lot of folks were wondering, what's going on with Tennessee and Rick Barnes? Back-to-back big wins for them, and, of course, Auburn coming in on a four-game winning streak.
Yeah, and with, you know, to speaking of Barnes, I mean, this was the latest in his 11 years, in his 11 seasons in Knoxville, that they won a true road game. Now, they had the really nice neutral site win over Houston at the at the Players Era deal out in Vegas, but they had not won a true road game until Saturday night when they won at Alabama. And, you know, there was a little bit of an asterisk there because no Aiden Holloway. I mean, obviously the Betty Ocko story was you know, dwarfing everything because that was his first game. But, yeah, to go into Alabama and win and to go into Athens because, you know, Tennessee and Georgia were basically right. I mean, if you go by the AP poll, I think Tennessee, Kentucky, and Georgia are like the first teams receiving votes, and Auburn's right behind them. But, yeah, I mean, it's two really nice wins. And what a statistical anomaly last night. Tennessee had 26 offensive rebounds, their most ever against an SEC team, 26 defensive rebounds, so 52 total rebounds. They out-rebound Georgia 52-27 and win by 1 point in overtime.
Wow. I didn't realize that was that kind of margin. That's, we're obviously – Justin and I were at Auburn Arena, so, I mean, you're able to keep up the score and everything. I didn't know all those details, so that's that's fabulous. It's going to be a really good matchup though Saturday night. This the Auburn team, obviously we've talked more about that here, David. They've settled into what their style is. It's not exactly what we or I think perhaps Steven even thought it would be back in the preseason. But they've really picked it up defensively. That's something that there's no question that Rick Barnes and Stephen Pearl really, really take a lot of pride in is their defense.
Well, and of course, the Florida win was as impressive as any, you know, team has in the SEC. I mean, going to Florida and stopping their win streak because they were playing better.
Oh, they looked better than everybody, right?
Yeah, and the way Auburn pounced on them, and then I mean, because that was impressive on two fronts. One, you jump all over them. Two, you knew Florida was going to make the run. They did. They get up two, and then Auburn just – and I love the way Pearl spoke about that afterwards, just talking about guys. I mean, the under-eight timeout, if you had told anybody that we're tied with the – you know, we're tied in the under-eight, would you have taken it? And they're all like, yeah. And then he's like, well, you know, and then he's like, we'll be up five or six in this next one, and they were. So, I mean, just a huge win for them. It is a unique dynamic, though, when you look at that roster because – you know, I like watching Auburn play, and, you know, I don't know why Overton got off to a little bit of a shaky start, but he's obviously got it together. You think of, you know, Murphy seems like more of a health reason that he's finally healthy and the way he's playing. And, of course, Keyshawn Hall, what'd he have, 3 points in the first half and 28 in the second? I mean, he can just go off whenever he wants. It's an interesting dynamic because the player that I know is getting questioned the most by Auburn fans right now is Pettiford. But, you know, and Jokic, I mean, what an unbelievable player he's turned out to be in the physical play. And I know he and the Texas guy with the name I can't pronounce, I mean, they were going at it a bunch last night. But, yeah, just you can definitely tell that Auburn has gotten better and better and better since the start of the year.
Yeah, and then Elijah Freeman, who played last year, you know, in Nashville, is a guy with a world of potential. So they're not deep now. They're basically a seven man rotation.
It's a roster that has a lot of. I mean, all along, and I know Justin can speak to this more than I can. But even when they were having their ups and downs, you were just like, there is a lot of upside to this roster. And you're starting to see that. I mean, they've got a lot of versatility and can do a lot of things. So and it's you know, more than anything, it's a really fun team. I mean, I had the channel changer going back and forth real fast last night because you know, you had, you know, Tennessee Georgia was originally supposed to be on Tuesday but got moved due to weather. But I mean, those were two incredible games to go back and forth from last night. It was kind of weird because the Tennessee game, it was like a 40-minute first half. I mean, it went by real fast, so that there was some separation between those two games to where you could kind of watch a decent amount of both of them, which made it fun.
Yeah, and so here we are approaching the you know, the midpoint, just a couple of games away from the midway point of the season. Texas A&M at the top of the league has got to be a surprise.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Bucky Ball has done it, and I mean, I'm familiar with him with his days in the Southern Conference. I mean, just kind of the wild deal, and I don't know how much people are talking about it at Auburn. I know it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda thing, but if they allow that basket, Auburn would actually be the top seed in the tournament today. Because, right, they'd be tied with Arkansas and Florida and would have the tiebreaker over both of them. Yeah. So that's how close Auburn is to leading the league right now. But, you know, obviously they wiped it off, and, but, you know, they – it's a style of play that's very interesting. And, you know, Texas A&M is just one of those teams that ever since they've joined the league, they've had some years where they've been good. But when it gets to the postseason, that's just not a team that typically represents the league very well.
Yeah, A&M is, like, probably the most interesting SEC team because you can't ever really remember, like you were saying, like, you can never really remember, like, a deep Texas A&M postseason run or, like, oh, that season when they did all this. And you look and it's like, you know, oh, yeah, that's the plot. That's, you know, A&M, that's where DeAndre Jordan played. That's where, you know, homeboy that plays for the Lakers that's so good. Like, you know, there's so many, like, they have, like, a decent NBA presence. And yet, like, you look at A&M basketball and it's like, yeah, they'll mess you up. Like, Auburn's had a really hard time with A&M, you know, over the last few years. They'll mess you up in the regular season, but it's like, what happens after that? The crazy thing, I think, is that Buzz Williams left voluntarily and took that Maryland job. They are awful right now.
Yeah.
And A&M's number one in the league with a coach that, you know, was coaching high school ball not too long ago.
Yeah, and had like 15 minutes to kind of assemble a roster this past year. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, it was.
It's the system
it
works.
I mean, it has really been. What now?
The system that he runs works. It's worked everywhere he's been. Yeah. I mean, obviously you saw it, you know, in the Southern Conference, but like, it's really, really good and tough basketball to play against if you have everybody bought into it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that's one of the, and of course, y'all watched it live, but I mean, that was what, a 35-8 run in like 7 minutes that they had at Auburn. I mean, that was just incredible because I mean, Auburn was really starting to take control of that game, and the next thing you know, it's like, you know, I mean, that was just steal three pointers, steal, and
couldn't
like
get it in bounds.
Seconds,
that's
like,
right.
Yeah. So now I think you know, as far as. But I would not count Pearl, you know, just because of the unique dynamic. And who would have imagined this like a couple of weeks ago when Auburn struggled out of the gate in league play? But, I mean, when you're talking coach of the year, I mean, Bucky McMillan's, you know, your clear leader right now. But, you know, you do have Byington at Vanderbilt who, you know, they were the last undefeated team. Then they lost three in a row. But then what they did to Kentucky the other night was just an absolute massacre. But who knows? I mean, I think just the way this season has played out, if Auburn can stay in that hunt, then you know, just the, you know, for a first year coach and just given that transition and the unique timing of it and the unique dynamic of it, you know, maybe Pearl gets some consideration for that.
Well, there's a long way to go. Hey, you mentioned Charles Bediako at Alabama. I'd love to get your thoughts on that situation.
I saw a really funny tweet that said that, you know, it's only been two games, but Charles Bediako reminds me of that Charles Bediako that played at Bama about 3 years ago.
I don't know. This one looks better offensively than the one we saw a couple of years ago.
You know, Tennessee, he was a good offensive. You know, he only had like three rebounds against Tennessee and spoke out about that afterwards, just saying that's unacceptable. And, you know, they absolutely clobbered Missouri, and that's just kind of a team you don't always know what you're going to get. Obviously, they play much better at home than they do on the road, but Bama looked really impressive with both Holloway and Bediako. And, of course, yeah, now the Judge Roberts has recused himself, and, you know, the hearings the day before the first Alabama-Auburn game, so that's just kind of a unique dynamic for sure. I know we talked a lot about the coaches' reactions last week to it. I mean, you know, you had the Todd Golden. Of course, you've got that game on a Sunday this weekend, so that'll be entertaining to watch just because Golden said we'll beat them anyway, whether he plays or not, on his little coaches' show. So, and I think, you know, the coaches have spoken out with valid reasons. I mean, some just say as weird as that's because we've never done it this way. But, I thought Stephen Pearl brought up good points. How do you look a player in the eye saying, hey, I'm going to, you know, this guy's coming back. He's going to eat into some of your playing time and minutes and production. So, I mean, there are a lot of different things where you look at this and you're just like, wish this hadn't happened. But, you know, as Nate Oates said, we're going by our court orders.
Yeah, but David, I mean, I can't imagine that you feel like this is something that is going to be good for college athletics, letting guys who've been out of college for a couple of years playing professionally come back.
Yeah, I don't think anybody feels like that. And it's just kind of one of those Alabama against the world type thing. And as we all know, Nate Oates has had a couple of those scenarios since he's been there.
Yep.
But, you know, just watching the game in Tuscaloosa last week, he checks in with 16-11 to play in the first half, and the crowd goes nuts. I mean, it's just kind of one of those Alabama against the world type of situations, and we've seen that, we've seen that at a lot of different schools where it's just like, this just isn't right, it doesn't look right, doesn't feel right, but, you know, the school itself rallies around it.
Well, and these days in college athletics, I mean, there are a lot of things that don't look right, don't feel right, and you wonder, will anything come of it, or can we ever get this straightened out? I mean, this is my way of sort of segueing into the Ole Miss stuff that's going on right now. After Dabo's soliloquy, I mean, now it appears that Fresno State is going to get involved in this, too, with charges of tampering against Ole Miss and Pete Golding.
And you know where this all really seems chaotic is the fact that I read a column by Pat Forty in Sports Illustrated earlier this week where he just rips Greg Sankey. And to the two very topics.
Yeah, he said, where is Greg Sankey?
About,
good.
Right?
Good.
And he's like, he brings up the Ole Miss Golding and the Clemson, the Dabo, that dynamic. He brings up Betty Ocko, and he's like, where the heck is Greg Sankey during all this?
Probably reading a book about leadership, knowing him.
I mean, it really does take it, because I was a huge Mike Slive fan. I really love Mike Slive. He would, he would address you by name.
Absolutely.
There wasn't anything just like pompous about him or anything like that. And he was hired to clean up, because I love Roy Kramer too.
Yes.
It's just that when Roy Kramer left, you had Bama, Kentucky, you had about a third of the league on probation.
And that's one of the first things Mike Slive was asked and said that was one of the goals, is to make sure everybody was not. I mean, get everybody off and have no questions about them.
Exactly, and he was successful in that. And it's wild to look back at Slive and the people, the biggest detractors of Slive, they didn't like the deal he cut with CBS. They thought that he gave CBS too much of a break. So anybody that complained about Slive was usually about, you're getting us money, but you're not getting us enough money. Mm-hmm. Just kind of the greed factor. And it's like, if that's the worst thing you can say about Slive. But anyway, it just seems like, instantly we've just gone back in the days when like Slive took over from Kramer and we've just got a mess at multiple schools in the league.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And I said to Justin a little while ago, though, this does sort of feel like if the NCAA is going to try to show that they still have some muscle, look out Ole Miss, because they're the kind of school that they have slammed in the past.
Very true. Very true. I mean, they had they protected Mississippi State players ratting out Ole Miss, during the Mullen freeze days when the temperature was so hot between those two programs. But yeah, but the weird thing is there's just no guardrails. We don't know what's right and what's wrong. I mean, we do.
No,
I mean,
you know what's wrong.
Thing, yeah, we know that Betty Ocko, that's not good. That's not right. We know that calling someone or texting people in class to, ask about their situation and say, we know that's not right, but who's going to come down on it?
Yeah, that's the question. Great stuff as always, David. We really appreciate you spending time with us. I look forward to it every time we get the opportunity. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you're doing.
Sure thing. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW for Sport Talk, which is 2 to 5 Central each day.
All right, David, stay warm, take care, and we'll talk to you again next time.
All right, Justin, I'll see you up there Saturday.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it.
Y'all take care.
All right, David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, WGOW, joining us as he does on Thursdays. We will get to our first break. Open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle 7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Got Drew at the controls. Justin, I saw a couple of notes where sometimes we don't talk enough or how impactful some players have been. Obviously, Keyshawn Hall has been, but I saw a couple of things that are ranking Keyshawn as the top transfer in college basketball this year.
And the third most impactful transfer of the era behind
Janai
and
Oscar.
And Oscar Tshiebwe, yeah.
That's pretty amazing to look and see. Well, Auburn is listed as having the number one and number three transfers of this decade.
And it's really interesting because I think with Keyshawn earlier in the season, I had real questions about how he'd fit in with the way Auburn plays offense, how he
and
runs.
Has to play defense.
Has to play defense. He's still got to continue to get better on the defense.
But he has.
Yeah.
He really has improved defensively.
His offense, though, I mean, I think Auburn has figured out how to try to maximize what he can do. And, players are buying in around it. I think Kevin Overton is the perfect complement to him in the backcourt, and I think Todd Pettiford could end up being that guy as well if he can just start hitting shots again.
Yeah.
And you do that, and the way the Auburn's front court is playing right now, it's just he's been a pretty special guy in terms of scoring. Again, I think as a one-on-one scorer, I think the only guy I've covered at Auburn that is that level was Sharif, and Sharif only played for a handful of games at Auburn. It was a point guard.
Yeah, I was going to say, and Sharif doesn't have the size.
For Keyshawn Hall to be that size and just be that really good at going and getting his own shot and driving to the basket and creating trips to the free throw line, it's different. I mean, it's covered a lot of awesome basketball players at Auburn, and we'll see where Keyshawn ends up with this one season. But, I mean, just terms of the guy in front of me is not going to stop me from getting points. Auburn's had some awesome.
They haven't so far.
Yeah, Auburn's had some awesome players that, like, in the framework of the offense, could be all world good. Janai was a great example. Jabari was a great example of that. This dude right here, though, it's just like you can run a set and it might not work, but and you just kick it to him with a few seconds left on the shot clock, he's gonna get a look, whether it's from the free throw line or at the rim or. He's shooting 42% from deep this year.
Yeah.
Because you saw that last night as well in the second half. Because when Texas started backing off of him or trying to play, and it's just like worried about those downhill drives, it's like, all right, you give him some space. He is completely fearless at pulling.
Oh, yeah.
Completely fearless. And I think if he has space at all, I don't think he can shoot a bad shot because look at how well he shot it this season. It's kind of funny to think that he was kind of in a slump before that for the Florida game. That Florida game, I mean, there's so many great things that Auburn did in that game, but I don't know if I'll ever forget. Yeah, Auburn hadn't won at Florida in 30 years, and usually they go down there and get whooped. What are you going to do? Keyshawn Hall is like, I'm going to score 10 points on the first four possessions.
I'll score the first 10. It's like
on four possessions.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, Florida hits a three, and then Keyshawn scores 10.
Yeah, he went 2-3-2-3, I believe, to start the game. And it's just like, you have that going. And the thing about him is that, I think he's done a better job. His first five SEC games, he had three or more turnovers in each of those games, had one with four, had one with five. He's only had two in each of his last three. And it's like when you have that high usage rate,
when he has the ball in his hands as much as he does,
you're going to get some turnovers. Yeah. But if he's cutting them down and he's taking smart shots and he's fighting on defense and he's fighting on the boards.
He's also made some really good passes. I mean, when somebody's open, he doesn't have a problem giving it up to somebody else that's open.
Yeah, and Kevin Overton was the big recipient of that last night when Texas was doubling him, when they were throwing more bodies at him, when they were pressing. It's just like, all right, kick it there. And Overton just couldn't miss, last night. And I thought that's another area where I thought Tahad did a really good job, where it was like the ball would be kicked to him, and then Tahad would go kick it to somebody else, or he'd go get a hockey assist off of him and just be like, hey, it ain't me tonight, but it can be somebody else. And so I thought they did a really good job. And then the proof is in. I will be stunned, and I mean against anybody. I will be stunned if Auburn ever gets to 1.9 points per possession and a half. They weren't doing – the worst teams they played this season, they weren't coming close to that
No.
number. You were talking – that is a once in maybe a lifetime kind of second half performance from Auburn on offense, and they just – they had their number. They knew what was killing Texas, and they just kept going to it and kept going to it. And that's the other good thing about this team is that – it is the Keyshawn Hall downhill drives. It is him getting to the basket, but it's other guys being able to do it, all that too. If you can counter, it's like, all right, well, now you have to worry about this guy. There was a good, really good play last night where in the second half, and it was when the game was still pretty tight, kind of gets a little bit later in the shot clock, and I can't remember if it's Sway to Murph or Murph. I believe it's Sway to Murph, or it could have been Murph to Sway. But it's like late in the shot, oh, what's happening? And you've got a big man,
yeah,
and it's a big-to-big, mm-hmm, big-to-big backside hit for a dunk. And it's just like when your bigs are doing that, yep, and you have that kind of backcourt, it's just pretty. And then, of course, finally hitting threes. Yeah. Auburn was less than 20% from deep over their last three games, and then last night, like,
and you
got
know
it
that,
all back.
I mean, these guys can shoot. You know,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, they're really good. And that's the thing. I mean, I pointed it out in the mailbag that goes out tomorrow. Tahad started the season, his first five or six games, he was 18% from deep. And then over his next five, he was 49%.
Yeah,
so it's like he has the ability to turn it on. And then some of these other guys, I mean, Elijah Freeman, I don't know what he has to go, you know, talk to a witch or something to get whatever it is off of what. Because he was the Ole Miss game last week. I mean,
so many of them look good.
Yeah,
I mean,
they go in.
I'm thinking that's good, and somehow
I still have that belief in about 80% of the shots Tahad Pettiford takes, where I'm like, that's a good shot, that's in good rhythm. Dang, it's not going down. But he has about one or two every game, mm-hmm, where you're like, there it is. So, you know, he has a big three pretty much every game now. And then you go back to that Ole Miss game last week where it was, you know, that mid range, you know, really the Michigan shot all over again, and then being able to finish the game, that is, it's like, that's, it's good to have a short memory for those guys. But yeah, it's just, you keep thinking, it's like, if Vegas Tahad can show back up again,
oh, look out.
You're looking at, I mean, this Auburn team's top 10 in offensive efficiency right now in college basketball. That was the other thing I pointed out. Auburn is a top 10 offense in the country right now, and they are like in the 200s in 3-point shooting. They are the worst team in the SEC in 3-point shooting. I can't remember the stat off the top of my head. They've won four straight. I won't pull it up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, they had won three straight, shooting about 20%. But, of course, last night was 11 for 21.
Yeah, 11 for 21. But even if you count last night, Auburn has – no. Okay, sorry. So,
well, they were 4 for 36 over two games.
Yeah. So when you compare the two, you've got Auburn is 5-3 in SEC play this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They are minus 81 on points off three pointers in those games. They were heading into last night, they were on a three game winning streak, being minus 27 from three.
Yeah.
Like, if you just, and Stephen Pearl said,
and you think, oh, then they're much bigger than anybody they're playing, which,
yeah,
they're not.
Nope. Stephen Pearl said it a few times in the last few weeks, and I think it just stands out to me every time he says it, because it's 100% correct. If you go back and look at those three wins, obviously last night was different, but the three wins before that, Florida, Ole Miss, and South Carolina, if you look at those wins, and if Auburn is an average three-point shooting team, all three of them are blowouts.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like that. That's pretty special because, you know, South Carolina's not very good, but you could have crushed them.
Ole Miss.
Doing that on the road, mm-hmm, they had won several in a row. That was big. And then, obviously, Florida's as good of a win as you can get. So, I mean, that's pretty special. And then last night, when you needed the threes to come through, mm-hmm, you finally got them.
Justin, of course, talking about you got a mailbag coming out tomorrow. Talk about what all you have there and is coming up, and how folks can grab the Observer if they don't have it.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year for everything we got going on at the Observer. We've got tomorrow, we've got a mailbag coming out, and Dan and I are going to do a podcast. We're going to talk Texas, look ahead to Tennessee. You can get that tomorrow morning if you're a subscriber. Man, this week we did had a film room on Auburn's defense and how all that worked against Florida, mm-hmm, why that was a big win. Had a contributor do a breakdown of his favorite transfers that Auburn's picked up in football. That was a really good one. And then, yeah, a lot of preview stuff. We'll have a preview of Auburn-Tennessee on Saturday. Hopefully I'm going to be able to get up there and cover that game on Saturday night and have that coverage throughout the weekend. So it's a great time to jump on board with the Observer, auburnobserver.com. Sign up there.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk a little bit about Auburn's transfer portal additions now. I mean, they're done at least for the time being, according to Alex Golish. We'll talk about that and more. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue into the final couple of segments on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. A final close to 20 minutes here on this Thursday with Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, yesterday, Alex Golish was down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. We talked about it a little bit yesterday and ran some of the audio. I think a very effective job by Alex Golish and the Auburn staff in replenishing a roster. When you have to go out and bring in 30-plus transfers, and Auburn right now has 39 transfers. So when you have 39 transfers and the signing class, they're close to 60 new players on this roster, most of whom are going to be available for winter workouts and spring practice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Auburn fans, if you're not, like, super up-to-date with recruiting and all that stuff, just know this. Jeremiah Cobb's back next year. Xavier Atkins, obviously a big one next year. And then it's pretty much a new roster. I mean, there's some other guys that they're going to be
young guys,
but it's a lot of young guys from the last few years. So it's like, yeah, get ready to learn pretty much a brand new roster. But I mean, that's this day and age of college football, especially after you've made a coaching change, especially if you're a team like Auburn where, you know, you've had several straight losing seasons in a row. So it is a reset button, but it's been a pretty effective reset button because when you have to do all the work to build in a new roster in this amount of time, I mean, sure, there are always things you could wish you could have had more, or maybe, oh, if we could have landed this guy or this guy at this spot. But I feel like it's a pretty balanced and pretty well-rounded roster at this point in the process. And they could still get more guys.
Yeah.
But it'll probably be later in the game where it's like you're talking about, you know, late high school signings or stuff like that.
Grad transfers
who can make that move late. So we'll see. We shall see. But, yeah, it's a really good rebuild of the roster right now. You got to see how it all comes together over these next few months.
Yeah, I've got them at 95 or so scholarships right now. And, I mean, you're looking, and there are only three returning offensive linemen.
Yep.
I mean, that was, I think, the most critical need was there on the offensive line. And they go out and get 9 transfer offensive linemen.
Yeah, I mean, it's not – if Auburn's offensive line is not – very good next season, I don't think it's because they didn't try or they didn't get enough dudes. They're going to have options there. I like the balance of you got some guys you feel like are going to be starters immediately, some rentals, got some guys from eligibility remaining. You've kind of balanced it out there. And look, here's the thing. The offensive line is such a tough position group to try to evaluate. Auburn, I mean, 2 of the 3 years Hugh Freeze was here, Auburn signed one of the best offensive line classes in the portal in the country and it didn't really turn out to anything. So, you know, I think when you look at this year's offensive line for Auburn, what it's going to be a measurement of is, you know, how much different are you with your coaching? How much different is the system for you? And how good were you at talent evaluation and finding some guys that could give you value without necessarily feeling like you had to go out and break the bank and go, you know, you didn't have to go get a Jordan Seaton. You didn't have to go get, you know, huge name guys. Instead, you got a bunch of guys that you feel like can come in and can compete right away.
Yeah, and I think two of the most important ones are 2 of the 13 USF transfers that are coming in. The two Coles, Cole Best and Cole Skinner, are two guys. You've got a center and a guard right there that understand. Not only do they understand the system, they're offensive line coaches with them.
I think easily you could say Cole Best is like a top 5 transfer Auburn guy.
I agree.
And I don't think people are understanding enough how big of a deal he was, because he came in that run where there's a lot of USF guys and all that, and he's like, oh, yeah, they got another guy from USF. Cole Best was graded out as a strong group of five center this last season. He's got years of experience at center, and, I mean, you think about the Alex Golish and Joel Gordon offense, what a center's got to do, and as fast as they go, and just having a guy that knows how to get things set, mm-hmm. get everybody lined up, organized, know how to make the calls and communication, and then doing it at hyperspeed. Well, he's already used to doing that, and he's got that rapport because the guy behind him and Byron Brown.
Yeah, he's got his quarterback, his position coach, his offensive coordinator, and his head coach.
It's as good of a battery as you can get, you know, right away for him, because obviously Byron Brown was one of the best quarterbacks in college football this past season, but to get his center. Obviously, people are making a big deal, and they should, of the receivers and all that. But to have the center, I think, is very underrated, because as we've seen, when Auburn's had good offensive lines this last decade, you've heard about it, especially when Auburn used to go really full speed, that up-tempo mm-hmm. stuff. It's like how – it's a second quarterback. That guy at center controls so much, and there's so much responsibility on his shoulder. So to get a guy that you don't have to teach, it's just – hey, learn how to play it with some of these new guys around you, but a lot of this is
still
the same.
Teach the new guys is what you're helping do.
That's so very valuable for this team. We'll see. You needed starter quality tackles, and I think you got some. I think you needed options at guard who could compete. I think you need some young guys that can develop for the future and maybe play right away if they can earn a job. You need depth. Best is as big of a pickup as you're going to get outside of quarterback in this transfer class for Auburn.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. The question we got a question yesterday from somebody saying, "What's up with all the tight ends?"
Alex Golish likes tight ends.
Yep.
And if you look at his track record, they use multiple guys. Like last season, I mean, Auburn brings in one of his tight ends from USF. But they use several, and he runs back to his time in Tennessee. Obviously, when he was at Iowa State, I mean, they would run so many tight ends on the field. But that's the thing that, like, separates the Golish and Gordon version of the veer and shoot that is different from what Heupel had done and some of the other, like, the Bryles tree, the Lane Kiffin tree and all that. With the veer and shoot, what you see is, yes, it is – Spread them out, stretch vertically and horizontally to the furthest extent. But also, if you feel like you can throw a tight end there and give you an extra punch, if the defense has to be worried about covering every blade of grass all over the field, then you throw that one more guy in there and it gives you an extra weapon in the running game, it gives you an extra weapon in the passing game, because you can take advantage of all that space. And so throw those options out there. There's a lot of tight ends, and I mean, he uses multiple tight ends. A lot of those guys have multiple years of eligibility remaining, so you can kind of build for the future there. But you got a couple guys that were pretty good rentals that you can get.
I'm telling you, and Jake Johnson and Arnold Fordingham.
A healthy Jake Johnson is a really good tight end.
He really is. Yeah, yeah, we saw that at A&M before last.
Yeah, and then Fordingham's is an interesting case just because he was a guy that. People are really excited about pre-injury with him as well. So you get these options and you just see what happens. You get a dude from ULM who could play like anything.
I wondered about him. I mean, he's a guy, H-back. Who knows? He was a quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's been a quarterback for 4 years before he comes in.
Feels like that's a special teams demon for you as well. Jack of all trades.
I wondered about, the Howard tight end possibly getting a look at edge.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
he was pretty highly touted.
Might be the case there. So you just run some options in there and see. I mean,
man, give me as many big athletic guys as we can find.
And also, it's like, you got 105 scholarships you can play with now. Like, why not? And that's the other thing. You get all these tight ends, and it's like, well, they're taking spots away from another position group you really need. Like, you've got depth pretty much everywhere at this point. So. It's a good problem to have when you have that many weapons, and then make some match and see what you can do out there.
And then of course the word this week that Dallas Walker's coming back. It's not a transfer portal addition, but that is a literally. I mean, he's a 360-pound, but I mean a big addition or return to this team.
Really impressed with Dallas Walker last season. I'll be very honest with you. When he got at Auburn, you saw his numbers at Western Kentucky, and you saw him out there. And I was like, I don't know. Yeah. He might not be in shape enough to do what it takes to be an SEC nose tackle. And he proved us wrong. I mean, he had a really good season, graded out very well, and to bring him back, knowing that the rest of your defensive line, you go get a number of really interesting pieces there, and you bring back several of those highly rated guys, those young guys. It's like, all right, where's the anchor? Who's going to be the guy to hold it all together? And to get another year out of Dallas Walker, I mean, if he has the season he had this past season this year, you feel pretty good about where Auburn's defensive front can go. Because especially it's like you bring him back and you bring Xavier Atkins back, and it's like you talk about run stopping. You get this dude who takes up so much space, and then you got a maniac behind him who seems to have unlimited range. That's a really good spine of your defense right off the bat.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, the linebacker position is just loaded, because Melendez and Diaz are they're going to be sophomores. They're going to be experienced guys. And DeMarcus Riddick healthy?
Yeah, a healthy DeMarcus Riddick is interesting. I will continue to say,
I'd look at him at edge. Outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn him loose. Even if it's just a third down guy. Yeah,
you want some help with the pass rush?
Turn him loose, because he's a weapon. He's a real, real weapon, especially in the pass game. He just needs to stay healthy. But, he's an athletic freak, and there's a lot to like. And then there's depth back there behind those guys as well. Really, really good spot to be in. Yeah, I mean, it's just you've got – if they can find some pass rushers – obviously, Womack was a huge pickup there for that, but I'm interested with second year Jared Smith, second year Darian Smith, like
JJ Falk.
I'm gonna still beat the drum for Joe Phillips. He's got to be healthy, but I like Joe Phillips a lot. I love his game, so there's potential there, and I think that's the interesting thing about this team is that I don't want to feel like this is kind of like a backhanded thing, but Auburn's had five straight losing seasons, at this point, or four straight losing seasons. So at that point, you look at it and say, this team's not going to have the expectations and the pressure of like, oh, you got to do something with all this talent heading into this season, but you got some dudes who are going to fight, and you still have some young talent that you want to build around for the future. So I'm really interested to see how they turn it loose in this system.
All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Thursday Drive.
Auburn IT.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final minute or so here on the Thursday Drive. Ferg, quickly, your thoughts on the matchup Saturday night up in Knoxville.
Yeah, it's going to be a really tough game for sure. I mean, you look at Tennessee, I think, the big thing for me here recently is I feel like Nate Emmett has really gotten used to playing in the SEC and scoring at this level. So playing with a ton of confidence right now. I mean, this is a team that's going to rebound the snot out of the ball and play excellent defense. One interesting thing about it, Auburn's been taking care of the ball really, really well. Tennessee's got a really bad turnover problem, so I'm interested to see how that looks out in this game. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to take a lot of what it took at Florida to have a shot to beat Tennessee, and at least Auburn's already shown they can do it.
Yeah, that's right, and they're going in playing really, really well.
Yeah.
It's always great to have you in, Berg. Yep. One more time, how can folks get the Observer?
AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there. $6 a month or $60 a year. Everything we do gets sent out to your email inbox. You'll get a mailbag and a podcast tomorrow if you sign up between now and tomorrow morning.
All right. Don and I back with you tomorrow. That's going to do it for the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.